Back to Radioactive Sports. The superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
I am Ben Holson. This is Radioactive Sports. Pete Wagner in for the superstar Mike Morris. He'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for sitting in, Pete Wagner. This is how we do this. Play a little trivia game show. Today we'll talk about and ask questions for the Minnesota Wild, March Madness Tournament, and WrestleMania. Three things that were the big stories in the sports scene over the weekend. We'll have two contestants, and we'll play for prizes. Four tickets to the any game of the 2015 Minnesota Swarm season, or a four-pack of tickets to Running Aces' April comedy show on Saturday, April 11th. Pete Wagner, you will be a lifeline for somebody.
Lucky them.
And so we'll ask three questions, all of them multiple choice. If one of our contestants runs into trouble during their three questions, they can ask you one out of the three questions, okay? But you're pretty up to speed when it comes to the Wild and WrestleMania. And pretty good when it comes to March Madness, I would say. In fact, you're the one that said you're the Renaissance man of sports. Or I made
you
that up.
You used the term Renaissance man, but I appreciate it. I like it.
I did.
Contestant one, Shane from Minneapolis. You're on 105 The Ticket. How are you, Shane?
Good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Three questions, all of them multiple choice. You have Pete Wagner as your lifeline if you come up to one that you're having troubles with, okay?
Awesome. Thanks.
Okay, Shane, question number one. Devin Dubnyk started two games for Nashville last season after a trade from Edmonton. The two teams he started against were the Chicago Blackhawks and the Arizona Coyotes. In those two games, how many goals did the Dubinator give up? Is it A, 2, B, 7, C, 9, or D, 12?
You know... I would be taking a shot in the dark. I know Pete Wagner knows quite a bit about the Wild. I think I'm just going to burn my lifeline and go with him right away.
That's a smart move, Shane.
I said, did you hear me, like, saying no?
let's at least collaborate on this.
Yeah,
what are you thinking?
We can work it. Okay, so give me the choices again.
2,
nope.
7, 9, 12.
I'm going to say, Shane, I think it's 9.
You think 9?
I'm going to stick with 9.
Man, it's hard to believe the way he's been playing to see him get sieved up like that.
I know. He was a disaster last year.
In fact, he ended up out of the league, too, didn't he? Well, for a while, he was in the AHL, and then he was home.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll ride with you, Pete. 9 it is.
9 it is, and 9 is correct.
Hey, there we go.
All right, Shane, a little Ric Flair for WrestleMania.
Doesn't surprise me that the wagon train got that one right. He knows everything about hockey and a lot of things, but hockey for sure. Question 2, Shane, here we go. Of all the teams that participate in the annual March Madness tournament, which two teams have played each other more than any other matchup?
Oh, wow.
Is it A, Kentucky and Marquette? B, Duke and UNLV? C, Michigan State and Gonzaga, or D, Wisconsin and Arizona?
Can you repeat those again?
Sure. Out of all the teams that participate in the March Madness tournament, which two teams have played each other more than any other matchup? Is it A, Kentucky and Marquette, B, Duke and UNLV, C, Michigan State and Gonzaga, D, Wisconsin and Arizona?
Hmm. I think Arizona's the popular choice just because they've played the last 2 years in the Elite Eight. But I don't think Wisconsin's been that good for that long. I'll go Duke and UNLV.
Duke and UNLV is incorrect.
Oh.
Pete, who would you have guessed?
I was saying Scotty and Arizona.
Scotty and Arizona. No, it's actually Kentucky and Marquette. The two schools have met 10 times in the tournament, more often than any other pairing.
What, back in like 1970?
I'm surprised by the Marquette half of that.
Yeah, but it makes sense, though, because Kentucky is usually a high seed and Marquette is a lower seed. So if you put the two together, that's just kind of how it works out.
I suppose.
Yeah. All right, Shane, you're 1-for-1 right now. Question number 3, WrestleMania. WrestleMania 2 featured the first boxing match in WrestleMania history between Rowdy Roddy Piper and what non-wrestler? Is it A, Sugar Ray Leonard, B, Mike Tyson, C, Mr. T, or D, Butterbean?
You know, I remember my dad talking about this back in the day.
God, I can help you with this so bad.
Could help me, you said?
I can't help him, though, can I?
No, you can't. You already asked your one lifeline question.
I'm dying over here.
I was hoping to get a 50-50, right?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry, you don't. This isn't your
going to be
a moment. Sugar Ray Leonard, Mike Tyson, Mr. T, Butterbean.
Okay, it's not Mike Tyson, because I feel like he's too young for that. I'll go Butterbean.
Butterbean's incorrect.
You better pity the fool.
Yeah, it was Mr. T. Sugar Ray Leonard actually was the referee for that match.
Yes.
Mike Tyson was the referee for the World Championship match at WrestleMania 14. And Butterbean fought Bart Gunn at WrestleMania 15 in the Brawl for All.
And Shane, that Mr. T thing was hideous.
It was really
awful.
Okay. Yeah. No good. Shane, you're 1 for 3. Hold on just a second. Shane from Minneapolis. We'll go to our next contestant. Is Chad from Elk River. Hey, Chad, you're on 105 The Ticket.
Hey, how we doing?
Pretty good. 3 questions, all of them multiple choice. You have one lifeline for one of your questions. His name is Pete Wagner. He's very smart.
Let's do it, Pete.
All right, Chad. Here we go. Question one. In the last season's matchup with the Washington Capitals at the XL Energy Center, Ryan Suter scored his only career hat trick. He only needed 3 shots to do it. How many shots total did the Wild have? Wild as a team have that night? Was it A, 17, B, 21, C, 29, D, 33?
Let's go with 21.
Correct. Question number two.
Great move.
Chad, in 1956, these two teams played arguably the most boring game in March Madness history, combining for 105 total free throw attempts. Is it A, Weber State and Miami, B, Texas and Virginia, C, Morehead State and Iowa, D, UCLA and UConn?
Oh, let's go with D.
D, UCLA and UConn?
Yes.
That's incorrect. It was actually Morehead State and Iowa.
Ooh.
Question three, you still have your lifeline left with the Pete Wagner. Question three, who sang the national anthem to open the first ever WrestleMania? Is it A, Aretha Franklin, B, Stevie Wonder, who was in town last night, C, Mean Gene Okerlund, or D, Liberace played the piano?
Let's go with the lifeline here.
I'm going to go D.
You're going to go D, Liberace played the piano? Chad, do you agree with Pete Wagner, or are you going to go your own way?
Let's go with Pete.
Pete Wagner is incorrect. Mean Gene Okerlund was the actual guy who sang the first ever national anthem. Ray Charles sang a rendition of America the Beautiful before WrestleMania 2. Aretha Franklin sang that rendition before the show.
I am so sorry.
And then who's zooming who? Liberace appeared in the Radio City Music Hall, the Rockettes, in WrestleMania 1. So, we got a tie ball game.
Funny how that works.
Shane, Chad, you're both on the line, correct?
All right.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, and whoever wants to answer first, say your name. We'll go to you. This is a number question, so whoever gets closer will win. Here we go, tiebreaker. How many goals did Devils defenseman Seth Helgeson score in his 4 years at the University of Minnesota?
Dude, I have no idea. Chad, you can go first if you like. Let's go with 42.
Chad says 42. Shane, what's your guess?
I'll go one higher, I guess, 43.
Chad went with 42?
Yes.
Chad is the closest. Do you have any idea what it was, Pete?
I'm going to say it's about 12.
Seven. Seven was the correct answer. 5 of them came in his junior season of 2011-2012. Congratulations, Chad. You are the winner. You get to pick between the 2015 Minnesota Swarm home game tickets. Lower level Swarm tickets start as low as $21. You can buy those at 1-888-MN-SWARM or visiting MNSWARM.com. And the other winner gets a 4-pack of tickets to see the Running Aces April Comedy Show Saturday, April 11th with Shane Moss as seen on Conan. Congratulations, guys. We'll come back with Hardball. Mike Berardino giving us an update from Fort Myers and Twins action next on Radioactive Sports.
Here for the Minnesota Twins team.
Time to oil up the mitts. It's Hardball with Mike Berardino.
The information in their head here, so I'm willing to learn it.
Definitely excited to have him lead the way.
Get your seam head talk right now on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
A high drive to right field, and that ball is gone. A home run for Bauer. And the first home run of the spring for Joe Mauer. Got something off speed, stayed back, got it up into the air. That is blowing a little bit out the right field, but Joe got it all.
That beautiful shot. Did you get a chance to see that over the weekend, Pete Wagner?
It's news.
It is news. First home run of the spring.
Yeah, when you see headlines of that, it's like, okay, now we can start the season. We're good.
I think you had some wind help there. But it's Hardball with Mike Berardino, brought to you by Nature's Fury NutriDrink. Vitamins have never tasted this refreshing. Got a night game tonight, Mike Berardino. The Twins cut down their rosters a bit over the weekend. Any news that we've missed so far this afternoon?
Well, yeah, they went ahead and added Blaine Boyer, 32-year-old right-hander who's been around. This is 8th organization. They added him to the 40-man roster, and which essentially means he'll be on the team to start the year. They guaranteed his $750,000 salary, which is pretty cheap for a proven reliever. He's been around, this guy. He was in Japan in 2013 for part of the year and was very good with the Padres late last year and has pitched a 169 ERA this spring, so he wins one of those bullpen jobs. We fully expect the Rule 5 guy, Jared Graham, also to win one of those jobs, but they don't have to solidify that until later in the week.
It's Hardball with Mike Berardino from the Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com. Now, I think it was on Friday we had talked about that the Twins were kind of kicking the ball around with Rafael Soriano?
Yeah, I don't think they were kicking anything there, but, you know, that was... There was a report that they were interested in potentially attending one of his workouts, and I laid out about 10 reasons why he didn't make sense for him.
That's what we did Friday. Yeah, money being probably the key reason.
I don't think so. That's one of them. But, you know, there's no Rafael Soriano. He was terrible the last 2 months last year. Anybody who saw him pitch for the Nationals, let's not talk about him because they really have an overbooked bullpen as it is. They have some interesting – they have an overbooked bullpen to the point where people who make six figures instead of high sevens or pushing eight. This is a guy, like I said, Soriano hasn't made less than $10 million in a season since 2010. Scott Boras is his agent, and they will hold him out because of his a lot of saves on his back of his baseball card, even if he pitched very poorly the final 2 months last year. They'll hold him out, similar to Kendrys Morales, until June if they have to see if they can get closer money. And Twins aren't looking to pay anybody else closer money. As Terry Ryan told me when I brought up that Soriano name the other day, we have a closer, and we have in Casey Fien, a setup guy who really grew into the role. So I think they like the back of their bullpen.
Well, and Mike, Pete here, you know, they have a closer, as we know. And then, you know, Casey Fien could be that guy, too, if there's an emergency, because, you know, we see Perkins get hurt here and there. So it really doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, no, it's just a name, an available name, and one that people know. And now that I say all that, they'll probably sign him in the next 10 minutes. But that's how it works, right?
Yeah.
No, Mahler just made the point, too, a few minutes ago. It's not necessarily always going to be Casey in the eighth, because Brian Dunsing has gotten better at handling people on the left side and the right side. He's not just a situational lefty. And he mentioned Dunsing in particular that they'll match it up in the eighth inning, I believe. It's going to be interesting. This final half dozen games of the spring, at Tom Kelly's suggestion, going back to their offseason conversations, Paul Molitor wanted his roster set by this past weekend, so that he could manage this run of games, as he called it, Red Sox week, home and away, a lot of games for the Red Sox. They'll see the Yankees tomorrow, in regular season fashion. So he's going to eat while still guys are quote unquote getting their work in. Molitor wants to be able to manage to the situation. I think he'll look at matchups even, he'll look at his historical matchups, almost pretending these are regular season games because he's never managed a game that counted. He's never been the guy. So even when Gardy would get tossed last year, Terry Steinbach was handed the lineup card. Molitor was just advising. So he needs this week as well to kind of line up things. But the bullpen roles are certainly malleable. And the lineup is, too, after the top three spots, I'd say the news as well today is that Molitor said that he really essentially committing to Danny Santana leadoff, Ryan Dozier second, and the newly powerful Joe Mauer third. That's how he wants to do it. And Torrey Hunter or Trevor Plouffe, depending on matchups and whether Torrey's out there or not that day, he's not going to play every day. He likes that right-handed bat, obviously, behind Mauer. So that'll typically be your top four.
Do you really, from your heart of hearts, feel as though Joe Mauer, a great hitter, a great even situational hitter, is really a number three hitter at the end of the day? Or is he a better suited for a number two?
I like him two and Dozier three.
Me too.
When Molitor said he was open-minded to that, he was going to kind of assess how it looked better, two or three, those two flip-flop. I said hallelujah on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because Dozier had 50 more slugging points and Mauer had 50 more on-base points, and that's pretty much historical for them, and that would lead you to want to flip them. However, Joe Mauer's been putting in a lot of work with Tom Bernanski this spring on hitting the inside pitch, turning on the inside pitch with authority, yes, that would mean hitting the ball to right field. And that's where that home run went the other day. And it was not wind blowing, Ben Olsen. It was crushed. He also crushed a line drive up the middle, what Mulder called a classic Joe Mauer swing, perfect Joe Mauer swing. He was very economical. He caught the ball out front, and he didn't just push it to left as he did so many times these past couple of years. Health is a big piece of this, and if Joe can keep his health and keep a quick bat and feel like he can do damage, that ball he hit over the wall was a 2-0 pitch, and it was a breaking ball. Wouldn't expect a breaking ball 2-0, but he kept his hands back and he crushed it. It was a no doubter, and it was a jarring moment. Spring training, yes. One home run, yes. But I think that went a long way to Mauer and Bernanski, or Mulder and Bernanski, really feeling that Joe Mauer can handle that number three slot in a traditional way.
From straight hitting perspective, he has spent so much time going the other way, inside out, taking a ton of pride in that, and we started seeing the shift. And that really came into play last year. If Bruno and Mauer are able to put the work in and get the hips and turn and hit, like you say, work the line, work it to right field with authority, that should take that shift out of play, shouldn't it, a little bit? And then, therefore, things should open up for him.
Very much so. You might see, in the short term, you might see strikeouts continue to climb, and Joe's strikeouts have climbed the last couple of years to the point where it was almost alarming, but a lot of that maybe was health-related, the oblique that he played through for several weeks, and, of course, the knee instability. And then, you know, coming off a concussion, it's very almost impossible to quantify what that did to tracking the ball. But Joe, I just talked to Joe about it this afternoon. He feels great physically here at the end of spring training. Feels great about his work with Brunansky. Really, really feels good about the ability to cover that inside pitch, not get jammed, and do something with that pitch. And I mentioned, maybe Alex Gordon won't be playing on the left field line anymore. And he kind of laughed. And I think that's a big part of this. The term that Mulder used the other day that Joe hit that home run was keeping them honest. They want to keep opponents honest so they don't feel this complete ability to swing the outfield all the way over to the left and basically give Joe right field all the way to the line. I mean, that's if you have to play Joe Mauer straight up, his line drive percentage last year, as we talked on the show, did not drop at all. It was the same line drive percentage quarter of the time. Balls in play, it's a line drive off Joe Mauer's bat. It's just it was too predictable that it was going to go left center over to the left field line. So now, like Pete says, if he opens up the whole field, it should be good.
Talking Twins with Mike Berardino from the Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com. Obviously, one of the other big stories over the weekend was Mike Pelfrey being moved to the bullpen. He wasn't so happy about that when the news was first told to him. In fact, asking for a trade right away. Then ended up talking, I think, to Terry Ryan, calmed him down just a little bit. Where is Mike Pelfrey sitting? $5.5 million. How is he doing today? And what role do you see him in the bullpen? Is he a long reliever? I mean, would he be a good setup guy? I know you talked about Casey Fien and Brian Dunsing being pretty good in those roles, but where do you see Mike Pelfrey fitting in the bullpen?
Well, keep in mind that Anthony Swarzak no longer here, and he had that long relief role for the last several years. He's now with the Indians, and he made the team, which is nice because he's a solid major leaguer. But Pelfrey, I would see certainly in the short term and probably for the first month of the season, barring an injury in that rotation, will be in that Swarzak role. Somebody doesn't make it through the sixth, and it's Pelfrey time potentially. But the other caveat is while Swarzak was good to go and come into the middle of an inning and a jam, was pretty good at stranding runners. For now, Paul Molitor is going to limit Mike Pelfrey to clean innings as much as possible because he's not sure how long it'll take him to warm up and how he'll do coming into a jam. I mean, Pelfrey's used to making his own jams, no doubt. That's why how he got to this point in his career. But and that's why he worked out of the stretch exclusively yesterday up at Sarasota, because he wanted to get more comfortable with that. But the good news is Pelfrey said that it only took him 10 or 12 pitches to get loose in the bullpen. Normally he throws 60 before a game, which might explain some of his troubles as a starter.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
A lot.
Yeah, that's a ton.
That's about an hour's worth almost to a degree. the fact is, at the bottom line is he can also spot start too, which Swarzak did, and he has that capability as well. It's just a mindset change. Obviously, for Pelfrey, it's a change in how he did things, and hopefully for the Twins it works out.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the rotation and the bullpen. What you were saying, Mike Berardino, the bullpen basically being docked. And the only question that I have is that center field position, Jordan Schaefer and Shane Robinson. But we'll have to get that to that another day because we've run out of time. Hardball, Mike Berardino, Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. Thank you, sir. You got a game tonight coming up here in just what is a little over an hour away?
I would say, about 50 minutes. So here at JetBlue.
JetBlue
awesome.
Stadium. All right. Awesome. Thanks, Mike Berardino. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, Mike Berardino, Hardball every day, normally about 5:30. Brought to you by Nature's Fury NutriDrink. Vitamins have never tasted this refreshing. Jim Rich, Fox 9. We'll talk about the Wild and everything else happening in the area of sport. With the what do we call you again?
Renaissance.
The Renaissance
sports,
man
the sports
of sport.
Renaissance man.
No, not sports.
Oh, sorry.
Because sport is a little bit highbrow. The
sport,
Renaissance man
yes.
of sport.
Ooh.
Pete Wagner in for Mike Morris.
Sorry.
I'm Ben Holson. This is Radioactive Sports.
Radioactive Sports in the afternoon on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
How about those Vikings, huh?
Impressed with a lot of things in this game. You know, we had a huge win last night. We come back in today, and there was a real sharp focus and a real determination to our group today, and that's a good sign.
Coach Mike Yeo and the Red Hot Wild winning back-to-back games Friday and Saturday. This is Radioactive Sports. I'm Ben Holson, the superstar off today. Pete Wagner filling in for Mike Morris. Mr. Morris should be back tomorrow. Joined now by Fox 9's Jim Rich, everybody.
How you doing?
James.
Yeah, he gets his own song.
Yeah, you have your own song when it comes to hockey games.
Yeah, I suppose.
During the regular season. Everybody gets their own song.
But this is a good one. This has got his name in it.
Wow.
It's a pretty good one.
They wrote it about me.
And everybody wants to be rich.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I get it. Jim Rich.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Part of me thinks that I might just take a step back and listen to you two hockey minds talk about the red-hot Minnesota Wild, the hottest team in the NHL since the All-Star break. Devan Dubnyk getting the first star again after an unbelievable week last week. Two back-to-back, back-to-back wins. Back-to-back, back-to-backs. 4-0 last week. Yeah.
That works. You got it.
He's fantastic. And then Saturday, against the defending champion, Los Angeles Kings, Nino Niederreiter and Mikko Koivu scored two goals apiece. I mean, this team, coming down the stretch here, six games to go. Pete Wagner said 4-2 probably in these last six
Maybe
games.
Maybe even 5-1, Jim.
Your thoughts?
I don't doubt anything anymore with this club. Every time I try to tamp down the enthusiasm and say, well, you know, gee, I don't know, these are back-to-back. Calgary and Kings are really, you know, going to be hungry. They're really going to throw everything at them. It doesn't matter. It doesn't faze this club one bit. And now you start looking at what's going on and what we're witnessing, and all of a sudden, it's like these lines finally have some chemistry to them. Each one of them has kind of found their niche now, and the guys feed off of each other. And I think we really saw the coming out of the Koivu, Stewart, and Niederreiter line this week. And I think those guys could be the most important keys to a long playoff run if that line can stay effective.
Well, here's what's so great about those guys, too, Jim, is the size and the ability to win battles and face-offs
right.
and all of the other things, which you and I, with the On the Ice show maybe 2 months ago, were not really sure about the physicality of this team with the tight-quartered battles, and those guys are really coming into their own. And not only are they creating chances now from the dots down, but off the rush as well, so they're kind of a dual threat. That give-and-go, that breakout from Brodin to Stewart, and then the redirect through the wickets in the Calgary game by Koivu from Stewart was incredible.
Well, right, and that's what, you know, I really didn't know what they were getting when they got Stewart. And I just thought, well, okay, you know, it's a piece you're picking up from Buffalo. You had a rotten year there, and I'm thinking, all right, this is just a draft, you know, a rental for down the stretch. Now I'm thinking, they may want to keep this guy.
Yeah, it's so funny.
that we want to hang on to.
Well, I was having a talk with my good friend Pete Henches about that one, you know, knowing, and our discussion was that. Okay, so then, you know, on the shelf is Matt Cook, and he's got 1 year left. And then you have a guy like Ryan Carter who comes in, and he's just spot on. I mean, the guy picked up right where he left off and was playing terrific on Saturday night. So then what do? You've lost all of these picks along the way. Do you move a guy like Matt Cook for a draft pick re-sign a guy like Stewart?
Well, they have given away a lot of picks the last couple of years to load up on these draft day deals with Dubnyk and with Stewart. They gave up a second, and he doesn't have a second this year, or it's a third, I think he doesn't have this year.
Right.
But anyways, there are some that he's dealt away, and I think he's feeling he is a little thin, so he may be willing to do something along those lines to restock the cupboard with picks for down the road. That may be his next move now, is because whoever thought they'd have an embarrassment of riches, but
I know.
That's almost what it looks like up front right now, because you still got guys, like you said, sitting on the shelf. You got Jason ready to come back with the collarbone. You got Cook skating today. Brodziak, who will be a free agent at the end of the year. But, you know, he has pieces that maybe he will deal on draft day.
And all of these guys have contributed along this way in different aspects of the game, but it's clearly come together. The thing that drives me crazy as the pseudo coach, wannabe coach, whatever you want to say, is I can't stand line 1, 2, 3, and 4. I don't like that. I don't like the label, because, you know, you hear all this, oh, the fourth line is just, look, it's, well, no, they're dressed for a reason, because tonight is their night and they're matching up against this team. So if I'm a coach, I like the four lines that I'm rolling out with this team right now, and I don't have numbers on this group because the balance, according to Bob Hartley, is the best he's seen in the league.
Well, and that's what is getting kind of interesting. I think I heard that same interview as well with Hartley, and he talked about the speed of the Wild and that how the synergy of each line can come at you with something different. And so Yo can sit there and match lines with what he feels will be most effective against X, Y, and Z. And this is something that this team's never had. They didn't have this last year in the postseason. They didn't have that depth. They didn't have it 2 years ago. You know, I don't think they've ever had this in the franchise existence. Even when they made the run to the Western Conference Finals, it's not the talent that they possess right now. And you look at what they have and the feeling they have and the X factor that Dumba all of a sudden throws into the equation, where you have, and this is going way out on a limb, but I mean, he's almost a Bufflin or a Burns type of defenseman, that he's so dangerous, but he's dangerous to your team in two ways. He's going to be a liability defensively sometimes, but he can be a huge asset offensively, where those players are that same MO, and they didn't have that. I mean, Suter wasn't that guy that can go from one end of the rink to the other. I mean, he's just chomping at the bit to jump in on every offensive play.
Yeah, this is the deepest Minnesota Wild team I've ever seen. We're talking Wild hockey with Jim Rich from Fox 9. Jim, for just a minuscule amount of time, we were ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks. The Minnesota Wild were this weekend. The Blackhawks bounced back, and they're 1 point ahead of the Minnesota Wild. We were talking to Pete Wagner about this earlier today. As fans, and obviously the team and fans are completely different. I'm a fan. I want to beat the Chicago Blackhawks. Obviously, we play them in Chicago coming up on April 7th. That's a Tuesday. Is there a realistic chance, or do you think that the Minnesota Wild will overtake the Chicago Blackhawks and be third in the Central, or do you think it's just fine and they'll be happy with the seventh place, the first wild card spot heading into the playoffs?
Heck, they can track down St. Louis the way these guys are going. We're always looking at who the Wild should play and what team matches up well against us. Now we're turning into one of those teams that, who cares? It doesn't matter who they draw. They're going to be fine. And I've never said that before about this team, but you look at the situation they're sitting in right now and what they're doing right now. I mean, people in other cities are going, I hope we don't draw Minnesota in the first round. And before, everybody was salivating to see the Wild.
in the regular season, let alone the post.
I think it's a Michigan State thing with the NCAA March Madness bracket. When we were talking to Amelia Reno earlier, it's one of those things where you get in the playoffs and it's the hot team that usually goes and ends up winning or heading to the championship. And right now, ever since the All-Star break, the Minnesota Wild are the hottest team in the NHL, and they look damn good.
Jim, back to your point a moment ago when you talked about, you know, it doesn't matter who the Lions match up with. To your point, I completely agree with that, and that's why you have won the amount of games you have in a row on the road, because you know what? You can put line A, B, C, or D, because I don't number them. You can throw them out there, and it doesn't matter who the other team puts out there because they're matching up so well. That's what makes this thing such a difficult thing, because they can win both at home and on the road with regardless of what their options are.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing, and this is going back to Ben's point, where you talk about teams and, you know, getting on a roll going into the playoffs, and Glenn Sonmore's always would eye up teams by looking at their last 10 games going into the playoffs. Doesn't matter if you're the top seed and you're the President's Trophy winner, but if you went into the Stanley Cup playoffs 2-8, those are the teams that you look to get bounced out right away. And if you come scrambling in like the LA Kings, just get that eighth spot, but you've basically been in playoff mode since the trading deadline, like the Wild, those are the most dangerous teams to watch out for, because they already have been playing with fire every night and knowing that the mistakes can't be tolerated this time of year. And that's what the Wild's mentality has been since they brought Dubnyk in. They were in such a deep hole. I saw a stat today that since January 15th, the Wild are a plus 45 in goal differential. The next closest team is Calgary at plus 16.
Wow. I mean, it's not even close.
Crazy how they have separated themselves from the pack.
And that's why the Dubinator, I know he's only played really half the season, but he deserves the MVP award in my opinion.
I'm concerned.
With what?
Jim and I have just absolutely, I think, been known to sort of temper the enthusiasm, right, Jim?
Right.
And
yeah,
now
absolutely.
I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop here because now you and I have just jumped on board.
You're
and you
a
know
Minnesota
what
sports fan, and that's what happens
just,
to us Minnesotans.
Every time. But to your Dubnyk point, Ben and I talked earlier in the show about Vezina. Absolutely, he better be on that list, Jim. But then why not, as Ben suggested, MVP? Because without him, this thing doesn't turn to the where it level it has.
No, there's no doubt. He is a definite Hart Canada Trophy. The Vezina, though, I think is going to go to Carey Price. He's been phenomenal for the Canadians, and they're a team that really rides their goaltending, because offensively they don't really get a lot done outside of Pacioretty. So, you know, he's going to be that winner. But Dubnyk certainly is going to be in the conversation for most valuable player in the league. You know, some voters may go, well, he only did it for a half a season, but what he's done in this half a season has put confidence back in this club. And, you know, I mean, you've heard it night after night. Zach Parise, after that Islander first period, he said, we should have been down 5-0 if it wasn't for that guy. If there wasn't him in the Nets, we would have been killed. And that's what the players believe in right now, and that's where it seems to be headed with this club.
It's funny how we're so excited about the Minnesota Wild right now, when really this team should have been performing this way the entire season, and they're just finally now playing up to expectations.
Well, this way is insane. Well, this is the best.
This is off the charts.
Yeah.
I don't think I can think of a team that's been, you know, maybe the Hawks a few years ago, but I can't think of a team that's doing what this team is doing to other teams.
Yeah, and
on
I love
daily
it.
Basis.
I love it. Can't wait to
and
watch
right
more games.
It's right here in this market.
Can't wait till Thursday. So many days off in between. I hate it. Jim Rich, Fox 9, thanks for joining us. The Superstar will be back tomorrow, and we'll talk to you again at our normal time, 5:14. Thank you, my friend.
All right, boys.
Talk to you, Jim.
Up strong.
Have a good evening. We'll watch you on Fox 9 the rest of the evening. Jim Rich, everybody. Coming up, the Minnesota Vikings and Adrian Peterson have been back and forth with this. He said, this and that. I don't want to play here. Our client doesn't want to play here. We went out uneasy, all these silly feelings. Last week, there's a former safety in the NFL named Tim Watson. He was drafted in the sixth round by the Green Bay Packers, never played for them, was on the practice squad, ended up playing. I mean, he was a bit player on other teams, but he ended up writing an open letter to Adrian Peterson, and I want to read the excerpts to you. and get your thoughts on it, because it's really bearing his soul. He's a former NFL player, talks to him as a fraternity brother type of deal, not necessarily taking shots at Adrian Peterson, but saying, hey, you know, maybe think about some of these other things when you're going on the media and saying, you know, that you want out of the Minnesota Vikings. Look what the Minnesota Vikings and the fans have done for you, and look what you've done to them type of deal. It's a really interesting blog. I'll read you the excerpts coming up, and then we'll take your calls at 651-989-9105. The letter to Adrian Peterson, an open letter by a former NFL player, next on 105 The Ticket.
I want to say, I truly regret this incident. I stand here and I take full responsibility for my actions. I love my son more than any one of you could even imagine. Man, I'm looking forward to, and I'm anxious to continue my relationship with my child. I'm just glad this is over. I can put this behind me, and me and my family can begin to move forward. Thank you.
Adrian Peterson apologizing. Bob Sansker doesn't think he actually said the word he was sorry, but I think that's an apology. That was after he pled no contest to the misdemeanor and the court case down there in Texas. This is Radioactive Sports. I'm Ben Holson, the superstar Mike Morris off today, joined by Pete Wagner, the wagon train in studio. Good to have you here, my man. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Last week, there was an open letter to Adrian Peterson, a blog from former safety Tim Watson. He played for the Green Bay Packers, was drafted in 1993 in the sixth round. He never actually played. He was on the practice squad. Spent 2 years after that with the Kansas City Chiefs, 1 year with the New York Giants, and then 1 year with the Philadelphia Eagles. And he goes on to say in his blog that he's not a Lawrence Taylor by any means. But I think he had some really pointed messages, and you can find the blog online. I'm going to read you some excerpts. It's going to be a little bit long, but this open letter to Adrian Peterson, I really think hits home, especially for Minnesota Vikings fans that are wondering, dude, what did we ever do to you? What did the Vikings ever do to you? Why are you quote-unquote uneasy about coming back to the Minnesota Vikings? Why does your agent Ben Dogra say, we want out of Minnesota? All this and that. So here's the letter, and then tell me what you think. 651-989-9105. An open letter to Adrian Peterson from former safety Tim Watson. Dear Adrian, let me first of all start this letter by sharing that I'm a huge fan of what you've been able to do as a football player. Your style of play and resulting performances have been nothing short of spectacular since you became a national brand as a freshman in Oklahoma. However, the unfortunate ancillary consequence of your bigger-than-life persona is that very seldom, if at all, will people share painful truths with you that present counterpoints to a stance you might have a particular issue. As a member of our very select fraternity of both current and former NFL players, I am not one who's subject to such a constraint. I actually feel that we have an obligation to be real with one another within this unique assembly. Of course, there's this high likelihood that you will never see this letter. However, as I've watched, read, and heard about many of the publicly revealed aspects of your case with your son, as well as the current standoff with the Minnesota Vikings, I felt a third-party observation without an emotional attachment might be useful to hopefully provide you with some perspective. Now, venturing back to the initial incident that started your current journey, I think you would agree now that the level of corporal punishment you inflicted upon your son was over the top. Based upon your own public statements of contrition for what you did, like the one we just heard, we as public observers can either take your word as genuine or continue to cast doubt. I personally took your word to be your bond. Now, this is where we get a little cloudy for most of us on the outside. But from what we're hearing in reports, it appears that you and your wife felt betrayed by the Minnesota Vikings because of the way someone within the organization handled the aftermath of the case. Many reports are that you felt like they, quote, didn't have your back. However, on the other side of the story, the Minnesota Vikings players, head coach, general manager, consistently share words of support for you in public interviews. And they reiterate their gleeful anticipation of having you back on the field as a Minnesota Viking. As players, when it comes to the business of the game, most of us proclaim to never count other players' money. In other words, we all recognize the volatility of an NFL career, so the most you can get, as soon as you can get it, the better. But I think most are aware that the level of compensation you've been able to receive on and off the field has afforded you, your family, and probably some descendants to come, a rather financially secure lifestyle. I only reference that to say your, quote, money in the bank may also be clouding your judgment. Again, we don't know exactly what occurred, what's causing you and your wife the angst against, that's continuing against the Vikings. However, what I and many others do know is that the turbulent emotions are the biggest deceivers of logic. Based upon the known facts of this case, it really doesn't appear that you and your wife are allowing logic to drive your decisions. Simply put, with the timing of your reckless child injury charges coming on the tail end of the Ray Rice domestic violence case, what were your expectations of the NFL and or the Minnesota Vikings? Of course, the NFL had to take some sort of action, and the Vikings had to comply. Yet and still, you were able to make considerable amounts of money for the 2014 salary. I'd have you imagine the same scenario happening with a teacher making about $40,000 a year or a local news anchor. Chances are that both of those two individuals would have lost their jobs under the public pressure from such a case as yours. However, their ability to care for their families financially would have really likely resulted in a much graver result than your situation. So, Adrian, I just don't know how you and your wife are applying reason to the situation. In other words, a lesser player would no longer have a spot in the NFL with any team, not to mention the Minnesota Vikings. But not only are the Vikings ready to have you back on the field and in the fold, leading their rushing attack, but they're willing to pay you $12.75 million. Additionally, a $250,000 bonus just for working out. Honestly, your workout bonus is more than the salary than that of a large majority of players in the league and much more than any other people working around the United States of America. When I played in the 90s, you must know what you mean to the Minnesota Vikings. Also, you must know that the power is with them and not you. But why on earth would a team like the Minnesota Vikings let their best player over the past decade go through either a trade or waiver? In closing, I just ask you to consider all the elements of this entire situation. Neither the NFL nor the Vikings caused this to occur. This is a matter yet to be decided because of a mistake you made, not them. So as a concerned brother only wanting the best for you and yours, I implore you and your wife to take the same empathetic position towards the Minnesota Vikings organization that you desire. Put yourself in their shoes and the NFL shoes as it relates to your case, and utilizing genuine intellectual honesty, what exactly would you have done differently towards you that amounts to fair or unfair treatment? I believe that you are able to truly release yourself from emotional hurt and decide logically. You'll discover the Minnesota Vikings organization is not your enemy. Fraternally yours, Tim Watson. Thoughts?
A lot. I mean, first of all, if he was waived, traded, whatever it would be, what in the world would be different in any other market than what would be here? The fact is, what happened happened. It is not going to go away. So if you're in Minnesota, New York, San Diego, Seattle, wherever you may be.
But he has fire ants in his pants about Kevin Warren, the guy that was made the COO of the Minnesota Vikings. He thinks that he alone was the reason why he was off the field all those games last year.
Compartmentalize that aside.
Okay.
So what's going to change from a public perception and from an organizational perspective? Why would any other team have any other issues? Okay, so now you have a person that he feels was after him to get him out, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what was the club supposed to do at that time? I mean, what were they supposed to do when you've got sponsorships flying out the door, which, whether you like it or not, money is what pays for a contract the size of his, and it's money that drives these organizations. So when you're losing a big portion of what you have to the bottom line, you better believe that's going to matter. But at the end of the day, it's the NFL that ended up doing what they were going to do anyway. So
the Wilfs wanted him to play. They activated him again, and there was all that backlash from corporate sponsors and Radisson
that's
in particular,
my point,
where they had no other choice. So they paid him all that money, and so for him to say that they aren't supporting me, I think it comes down to
the desire for a fresh start, hoping and feeling as though someplace else would take away everything that occurred. Now, the reality is, as I'm sensing from the coaching staff on down, I don't know about from a fan's perspective, I'd like to hear from everybody on that too, but it seems as though everybody's ready to kind of move on, but it kind of keeps just perpetuating itself.
Absolutely,
it's
yeah.
Weird.
I mean, what can you do next? What's the next move? If Adrian Peterson gets traded to the Arizona Cardinals, I would say it's much less pressure on him to go to the Cardinals than would be to come back and see familiar faces and have that embarrassment factor of knowing that what we talk about every day on sports radio and what people listen to and what they see on Fox 9 with Jim Rich, or what people have talked about when they watch SportsCenter about Adrian Peterson, what's in the Star Tribune, the Pioneer Press, that's got to be embarrassing for
him. I believe that people, generally the vast majority of human beings, are forgiving people and are willing to do that if you ask for forgiveness.
Amen, brother.
And if you acknowledge anything that you've done wrong and do that and mean it.
But it takes a big man to do that,
well,
and he hasn't yet necessarily done that.
Like, Bob's right to a degree. It really hasn't happened to that. I mean, I see what Bob's, you never heard "I'm sorry" in there. But you just have to say, people are willing to forgive you and forget because that's human nature. But you gotta ask for it.
But it takes a big man to ask for it, and he's gonna have to come back here to Winter Park and apologize to all his teammates. Where if he goes to Arizona or Indianapolis, he's not gonna have to do that at all.
He makes his living running, and he's running from it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. We gotta take a break, but we want your calls, and we'll come back. 651-989-9105. The open letter to Adrian Peterson from former safety Tim Watson was pretty interesting. Just read an excerpt from it. It was pretty long, and I mean, much longer too. Only read about half of it, and that was a long time, but it was a great story. An open letter to Adrian Peterson. Your comments, 651-989-9105. Radioactive Sports, we'll be right back.